Hello, this is John Millen. This is for anyone that's in the automotive industry. If you're selling new or used cars, I want to share something with you I think that will really help you. And, you know, it's interesting when I do these recordings, it's a podcast of mine, but it's not a typical podcast where you have two people, you know, you're watching two people talk for 45 minutes, which may be fine if you're watching Joe Rogan. But for most podcasts that I watch, unless it's a really good guest, they're really boring. So that's not what this is, hopefully, for you. This is going to give you a perspective of me working and not me, but I'm going to give you a different perspective on how you can optimize the sales of your dealership without adding salespeople or changing your comp structure or changing marketing. And this is the second time that I started this. The first time I'm trying to position this so that you get great value of it and I don't ramble, but I can encapsulate and share with you something that's really fascinating to me when we work with companies. So quick overview, we're in the employee benefits space. We're advisors. We get called in. Companies talk to us voluntarily to say, hey, okay, done what you got. I'm tired of my healthcare costs going up, coverage going down, and not retaining employees, dealing with the compliance regulations, whatever it is, right? And so we have conversations. So I'm going to give you an example of a Honda dealer that I'm working with right now and how effectively they were able to add $2.1 million to their top line sales annually with no change in personnel, no change in marketing, no comp structure, simply by we liberated trapped capital that's sitting in their OPEX, their operating expense under their personnel and benefits line item on the P&L. So it's showing up as an expense. We're going to liberate that. We're going to remove that from that line item and actually move it, if you're thinking of a P&L, to earnings or to profit, right? So we're going to take it out of an expense. By doing that, it's going to boost your top line and increase your earnings or your net profit. So hopefully I haven't lost anybody yet. So, and you're like, okay, what's the big deal? The big deal is that in this particular line item, when it comes to health and welfare and benefits and salaries, that bucket of money, that expense line item is typically going up every year, right? It's not going down, and it's going up either in labor costs, which has been a big shift for most companies, right? With things going on after the pandemic and inflation. So, that's always typically going up. And so as your salary goes up, typically what comes with it is what? Your benefits spend. So your salaries are going up. You have people that take your health insurance is the big one, of course, dental and vision, but it's the big healthcare piece that snaps to that. That goes up as well. And so what I want to explain is a concept that allows you to look at your healthcare budget a little differently than you might hear from most health brokers or insurance people or sales reps, right? And I do all that stuff, but I've learned to kind of position things in a new context. And it's not just about, hey, let me just go shop your rates and, we have great service and blah, blah, blah. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about, understanding the dynamics within your P&L and in your cash flow of the dealership and how we relate that to what you spend for health and welfare benefits. And so I think this is going to be really helpful. So I'm going to give you some actual numbers of a Honda dealer that I'm working with right now, just to give you a little perspective so that you can track with me. But understand, this is a single location Honda dealership. If you have 20 locations, it's just magnified, right? So rather than give you a scenario of 20 dealerships, I want to give you a very simple one with someone that has one so that it's not exaggerated. Number one, and number two, you can do the math yourself. You can like, oh, I understand with one what it looks like. Okay, I've got eight. This is what it looks like. But even if you only had one, it's still an amazing result. The end result, the benefit is amazing. So I'm going to have a little sip of my 5-hour energy before I get started. Okay, so, and hopefully you're listening to this while you're driving or you're getting ready in the morning, or you're taking your kids to school, or whatever. On the weekend, you're cutting your grass. Doesn't matter. That's when I listen to a lot of these. So use the time that you're doing something else that you don't need focus on, and that's when I do a lot of my listening to podcasts, especially on my way to work. So I'm at work, and so I record these. So that's just a little tip. All right. When you think of salaries going up, your payroll costs going up every year, you think there's not much I can do. Like, what am I going to do, John? I need good people. The cost of labor has gone up a lot after COVID. I think we all can agree with that. And now we're in a marketplace. We're at the end of 2023, but this will probably be in the foreseeable future, is that your ability to attract and retain employees is very different today than it was 5 years ago before COVID. Before COVID, it was like, hey, we're growing. Everything's amazing. It's always been a big deal in certain industries. But in the automotive sector, I am sure you're seeing some of this. And I'm not saying you have massive turnover. So when I talk about attracting and retaining employees, I don't just mean like they're leaving. I mean mentally they're still there. 100% they're still there today like they would have been 5 years ago. So understand, when I say retention, they may be working for you physically, but mentally they're only giving you 60%. And so people are like, oh, wow. Because I hear a lot like, hey, we don't have that much turnover, and it's all relative. So I got, all right, you got 70 employees at the dealership. How much turnover you got? Oh, it's not that bad. It's probably, I don't know, 20%, you know, 15, 20%. For them, that's not bad. I'm like, wait a minute, that's what, 10 to 15 people a year churn, and probably in similar positions. So even at 10%, which is an average benchmark turnover, that's 7 people. And why go through that if you can maybe mitigate some of that by taking some very strategic steps when it comes to your health and welfare and your salary and your comp? You can do some simple things that may reduce that. I'm not over-promising and saying that if you have 10% turnover that this is going to make everyone stay, but I will tell you, I'll explain to you the impact in just a second from a real comment from employees of how they're thinking related to this and how it maybe deters one or two of the 7 to leave, or maybe it cuts your churn from 10% to 8%. That is a massive increase in cost for you. But even more important to me are the 90% people that are still there physically, but not there mentally. So when I say retention, you're retaining their brain power and their productivity, because productivity has been going down for most workers across the board over the past 5 to 10 years. And there are certain things you can do to mitigate that, reduce that when it comes to your non-cash compensation benefits package. All right. So hopefully you're tracking by now. Hopefully you're like, okay, this I'm going to listen to this thing because it seems a little different than what I'm used to from a person selling insurance. Because we're not going to talk about selling insurance. We're going to talk about how do you use these strategies in your business, whether it's me or someone else. This is about using this strategy and viewing things in a different way. It's a paradigm shift, right? It's a changing context. That's all I'm saying. And sometimes we're so busy, and me included, that I don't have time to stop sometimes and just think. Like, wait a minute. Let me just take a pause here and use my brain and just shut everything off and just be quiet and just be like, hey, what's the better way to handle this? And I think I'm going to give this to you, and I'm going to give you some actual numbers. Okay, dealership, single location, roughly 70 employees on payroll. Salary costs going up over time. So you have salary, you have benefits that get bundled to that. So think of your salary plus healthcare. Typically in a group of 70 people, nationally, the percentage of employees that are opting for your health plan are a little over 50%, between 50 and 60%, some in that range. Different industries have higher percentages. If you are a nonprofit organization, you're going to have more like 70% of those employees take your health care, maybe 80, maybe 90, right? It's a little different. If you're a restaurant chain, it's going to be a lot lower. Dealerships are fluctuating, I would say, around the 50% mark or under. And the other thing to know about this trend is, and you can do your own Google search on this, that the number of employees that are participating in group health plans based on size of company has been declining over the past 10 years. And in fact, the last 20 years, according to the Kaiser Foundation, you know, KFF.org. So you're like, okay, That's good, John. I like that because it's less cost for me. Like, I want fewer people on my healthcare plan. Yes, it is less expense, right? It is a lower expense load on the company, but it's maybe costing you more money. Again, it's a different context of how you look at it. So let's just say you're at 50%, right? It's pretty typical. So your labor costs are going up, what? I don't know, 5, 8, 9%. In that realm, you have labor, you have workers' compensation going up, you have insurance costs going up on those people, and you also have health and welfare benefits. So let's talk about medical, because that's the big one. Medical inflation has been has averaged 12.6% over the past 20 years, according to Kaiser. There's a chart on there, kff.org. If you want to check me, you should. That if you look at the last 20 years and the cost of the premium for healthcare for an average plan, you know, typical employer, and you look at that chart, some years it's gone up more than 12%. Some years it's been lower. Some years it's been a little flat, never really went down in the group space. But if you average 20 years, and I did the math, it's 12.6. You see things on the news that it says, oh, inflation is or healthcare is projected to go up, you know, 5.2% or 6.2%. I don't know where those numbers must be like for every single company in the nation. It's such a huge average. It doesn't even matter. But when I look at Kaiser and I look at like actual data, I'm not seeing 5% increases over time. I'm seeing 12.6 average over 20 years. And so that's, you know, how you're planning. You're not planning 1 year at a time. Okay. So healthcare is going up, and let's just back it off. Let's say it's 8%. Like, ours does go up. Okay, fine, 8%. Medical trend is right now in 2023. Baseline medical trend is 10% before you add usage and claims on that. So let's just say 8. Fine, it doesn't really matter. 8 plus your salary is going up. And so what do you do if you want to control the cost of labor? That is something that is a little trickier. Right? There probably are some things you can do. So I'm going to stay off that topic because that's not my expertise. But I'm finding people are having to pay more for good people, right? Maybe not less. And so it's an investment in your greatest asset. So that's great. And that's, I think, a great return if that person is an asset to your company and they're generating revenue or servicing or taking care of customers that is a recurring revenue for you or repeat business or service, right, in the auto dealer, or they're coming back for new cars because you have great salespeople that don't churn every year. Like, I can go back 3 years later and get a different car or lease a car from the same dealer. That would be nice, right? Rather than having some, where did all the people go that I used to work with? So, but what do you do with healthcare? So a lot of owners that I talk to are presidents or general managers or CFOs, HR, doesn't matter. You're like, there's nothing we can do with healthcare. And that is the narrative that the industry, the healthcare industry, the insurance brokerage industry really wants you to believe. I'm not going to get into the reasons, but I'll just say this general statement that it is healthcare in the US is a $4.3 trillion ecosystem, right? Insurance is part of that. And that entire industry makes more money as your costs go up. Flat out, there's no incentive for them to reduce your costs. Pharmacy, drug manufacturers, hospitals, insurance companies, even your broker is paid a percent commission on what you spend. And as you spend more, their percent commission goes up, and then they have bonuses on top of that. So the entire ecosystem is really not interested in helping you reduce the cost of your healthcare over time. That's a fundamental thing that you have to, once you grasp that, and once I learned this, it took me years before I knew this, kind of realized this, and I was in the industry. No one teaches you this little simple concept and piece it together and then show you with the pieces. So you gotta, once I learned this several years ago, I'm like, now it makes sense. Now I know when I go to trainings at a hotel with United Healthcare or Aetna or Cigna or Blue Cross, doesn't matter. Why, when I ask certain questions, either the person has no idea what I'm saying, they don't know the answer, they can't explain it, and they're always offsetting things by making it worse. They're bringing in skinny networks, they're raising the ER copays, they're doing all this stuff, but they're never addressing the root cause. So understand that that is a fact of the ecosystem. Now, that also means There are also people that are disruptors and that like to fight against status quo and get angry at that, right? There's an emotional response. And those are people like us that are like, why do you sell insurance, John? It's so boring. I'm like, I know, I could sell a lot of things more exciting. Like I could sell cars, like high-end cars or whatever, because it's an emotional thing. We want to help people from getting screwed in the healthcare system. That's why we do this. I get paid, certainly, and I have employees that get paid, and I pay them money, and I provide a great work environment, and I love what I do. I love what I do because it is very fulfilling to help people through the situation where they think they can't do anything. Okay, so the first thing you have to acknowledge, or at least temporarily, believe me, and check me later, is that you can affect the cost of your healthcare going forward. Just believe me for now. Just put that aside and go, okay, there are things that we can do, and I'm not saying just John or the Millen Group. There are things I could tell you to do on a call, and I do these calls every week with CFOs and owners across the nation. I explain to them what they can do generally to start fixing this problem, and whether they use me or not is something we discuss. It's not always a good fit, but I'm educating people. There are things you can do to affect the current and the future cost of your healthcare over time without being a jerk employee and putting everyone just on a high deductible plan. Even that's not working anymore. So there's things you can do that are legitimate solutions. So knowing that, when I look at your P&L and I see, and I'm going to pull up as I'm talking here, I'm going to pull up my case study here. So I'm dealing with, I'm dealing with the auto dealer. They're spending, so this is in 2023, about 4 months ago, we start talking to them. They're spending $312,000 a year on healthcare. They had about 35 people. So again, it's relative. You're like, oh, I got 300 on medical. Just do the math, right? The same concept will apply. So don't discount it. It's only 30, a big whoop-de-doo, or that won't work for us. I'm telling you, if it works for 35 people, it works for 300 people on your plan, or 3,000. The concept will work. It's just scaling. It's just a larger number. But just to keep the math simple and to make sure we capture everybody, I didn't want to use a massive example, which I could have, but I don't want to. 312 grand per year, all in healthcare, right? Not just employer side. It's employer plus employee. It's the total cost. It's what you write a check to that insurance company every year. Why? And so I get pushback on this. Let me explain this. It's not just what you spend. It's what your employees spend too. You are a fiduciary on that plan, just like your 401k. If you are ripping your employees off and making them pay half of it, and it's inflated and the coverage is crap, you are legally responsible for that decision. It's a fiduciary responsibility, whether you're self-funded or not. This changed in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021. Just so you know, it does not matter how big you are or the funding type. You are legally responsible, which is good. You should be. Just like on 401k, if I'm getting ripped off on fees from my employer, and you're like, well, it doesn't matter to me. We don't do a match. It's the employee's money. I don't care. You probably know that that's wrong, and you're going to get in serious trouble because someone's like, why am I paying a 5% load and it's eroding 30% of my earnings in my 401k just from fees in 20 years? And that's where lawsuits come, and that's just where, like, why would you be in business and just screw people? Once you know it now, like, okay, I can fix this. Total cost. They got a 32% rate increase, so their costs were going to go on January 1 to $412,000 a year. So 312 to 412, 100 grand increase. 32%. This is happening a lot more in 2023 than it did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. There's always been cases where groups have gone up, right? You've had big increases, but I'm seeing it a lot now in companies as small as 70, total employees, 35 on medical. So what's the call? What do you do? Well, they are experience rated, they're claims rated. They have over 50 eligible, so their rate is based on their claims and usage, either 100% if depending on the funding type, or a big part of it, even if they're fully insured. And so they had high usage. Now you're like, well, nothing we can do about that. Yeah, you're right. Someone gets cancer or is on Crohn's disease or takes Trulicity or goes to the emergency room 6 times or has an appendectomy, like 35 people. It doesn't take many claims to blow out what you sent in premium, and your medical loss ratio is 200%. But this is happening over and over and over, even if you're fully insured. So their response was, we are probably going to move everyone to just, we had 2 plans, just 1 high deductible plan. That was the broker's response as a solution. You have a high deductible plan that has no coverage, $6,000 deductible. They had a buy-up plan that was a $4,000 deductible with some copays. The response from the broker is, we're going to probably have to, if we move everyone to the high deductible plan, we can reduce the increase from 32 to like 25 or something. That's ridiculous. That's your answer. Just shove it into the employees and really drive people away. So that was one. The other was keep the plans and push the entire increase to the employees. $100,000, we're going to push that to the employees. That was the second option when I started talking to them. And I'm like, okay, yep. What else? So it's either we, you know, change plan design, cost shift to the employee. That's one solution. That works great. Yeah, let's do that. That's going to be wonderful for your top sales and techs. They're probably going to leave, especially if they have kids or families on the plan and they use it at all. Great. That's that. And then the second is we're going to just have the employee pay the increase. Okay. The third was the dealership could take the 100,000 increase. They're like, we're not willing to do that. That's a big chunk of money. Like, yep, it sure is. All right, what else can you do? Well, I said, did you go out for bid, and did you get a lot of declined to quote letters? And they, the broker did. We're waiting. They got 2 back, and they're waiting on 1. And I'm like, yeah, that was a complete waste of time for your broker, just giving you some feedback. And if you're listening, when you get a massive increase like that, understand that you have to send that to the broker. Sends that to other carriers. So that strategy of, oh, we're going to shop your rates, is irrelevant when you get a big increase, because they will not give you a rate. Now, this is groups that are not small groups. This is experience rated. You have more than 50 eligible, regardless of how many on the plan. This is 70 eligible, 35 on the plan. It's not a small group. It's a mid-sized group that's experience rated, and they will not release rates until you show them the renewal. This is not just a shelf rate small group plan. And you send that to them, and guess what they say? Oh, this is fun. Yes, I would like to take a loss ratio of 2.0 and take this on. So what do? They say no. Or maybe you get lucky and get 1 carrier to bid on it, but they're going to be coming in at like 25%, and they're going to mess with your coverage in the process. They're going to change something to shift more cost. So they're like, yep. I said, yeah, that was a complete waste. Rule number one, your broker should have known that and just been honest. Tell you what you need, not what you want. What you want is for them to go bid it out. What you need is someone to tell you, we need a new strategy here, because that's not going to work. And we're going to burn through 3 weeks of time at the end of the year to do this. So, little side note. But the playbook from the brokers is we're going to price out your plan. We're going to bid out your plan. We're going to get proposals, right? That's the typical response. And I'm just telling you, doing this enough times, and what I say now is, no, we're not going to do that, because you're going to come back and you say no, and I'm going to waste 3 weeks, or they're going to say yes, and it's going to drop it a tiny bit, and they're going to mess with your coverage. They're going to move you to an HMO and a skinny network, and you're like, oh, we didn't catch that. Or they're going to change your pharmacy plan. Oh, we didn't catch that, till you're already in it. So you need new solutions at this point. So I've been talking to them, and I said, hey, I think there are some solutions that you could do that for your renewal, that we could come in at the same rate, maybe a little bit above your same rate, maybe, 5 to 10% above your current rate, or maybe even come in below your current rates. And of course, they didn't believe me. They're like, how do you do that? And I said, and I'm not going to get deep into the solution on this call, but I would just say that I told them there are 6 ways that you finance your healthcare, and you are on one of those, and your broker probably talked to you about 2 or maybe 3 of the 6. And I'm going to tell you about all 6, because I am thinking right now, as soon as I had the call, I knew exactly the solution that would probably be the right fit without even sending it to any carriers or any vendors. But it's no different than when you go see a specialist, a doctor, and you tell them things, and then they immediately say, okay, I think I pretty much know what this is, but let's just double check, right? How do they know that? Because they've had so much experience, they've done it 100 times or 1,000 times, and they have so much repetition that they hear the pattern, they see it, and they back it up a little bit with some analysis, but like, I'm pretty sure it's this, but let's just run an MRI just to make sure, right? Or get a blood test or something. It's exactly what I did. So I've been on hundreds of calls, maybe thousands, over 20 years. I don't know. And what you just told me of the 6 strategies, did anyone tell you about strategy 4, 5, and 6? And they said, no, I've never heard of this before. Okay, it's not a secret. It's not what you're going to hear from most retail brokers because what? They make more money as your costs go up. Maybe they're new. Maybe it's a new rep. Maybe they're lazy. I don't know. But I said, we are smaller and we pride ourselves in trying to solve the problem. We get paid the same. It doesn't matter. We're fee-based. We're not a commission-based. We're a fee-based broker. So my job is to help you and keep you forever, hopefully. That's my objective. Give you a reasonable fee and keep you forever. So I explained that and I said, I'm pretty sure I know that option 6 on my list is the right call and your employees are going to love it and you're going to love it. This is not going backwards. This is going forward into a new type of design, a new type of option that has so many benefits. It has some negatives that we're going to talk about, but I want you to see this, but I need a little data, just some simple stuff. At this point, they hadn't hired us. I said, okay, what do you need? And it's like a simple census file just to get demographic data, maybe their plan design, et cetera. So I won't go deep on that because it doesn't matter. The solution was the solution. There's 6 solutions. Most people know of 1 or 2, maybe 3, just like these guys. Like, I have never heard of 4, 5, 6. Well, they've been around for, this one's been around for 4 years. This one's been around for 18 years. And this other one's been around for 40 years. So these are not new. Like, these have been around. The end result was when we, and we're getting the final numbers in now, they are projected to have a small total cost increase from 261 to 275, which is a 6% increase. So the difference between the new 2024 total cost, $275,000, and what it would have been, $412,000, is $137,000. Hopefully you're following. It's simple math, right? They're $400-something. They're going to be at $275. So the spread is $137. And so what I said was, okay, if your dealership is, if your net margins for your dealership, let's say average 8% net, right? So rate to earnings, maybe EBITDA, maybe it's net profit, however you want to look at your P&L. But let's just say at the end of the day, you're making 8% net margin, net profit on every car or service you do, all right, over total. What I'm going to do is I've just stripped out $137,000 that would have shown up in your P&L as an expense because you could not cost shift that to the employees. The reason they couldn't do that was I said it's not going to meet the affordability test, the 8.39% affordability test under Part B of the ECA regulations. Like, oh, what? And so some people know this, some people don't. Like, you cannot just jack the rates for the employees. You have to absorb that. In fact, what I'm seeing now is you may not even be affordable now. Like, you could be out of compliance. What you don't want to be in healthcare is be out of compliance on Part B, the affordability. And it dropped from 9.61 to 8.39 in 2024. I said, you got to, let's just run this. So you can't just shift that 100 grand. Most likely you're going to absorb that. That's your cost. That's going to come straight out of your expense. So when we allocate that 137 difference, which would have been their increase, we take it out of their expense line and it goes right to earnings, right? There's no overhead applied to that. It's a straight movement of expense dollars to earnings dollars or profit dollars. And at an 8% net margin ratio, $137,000, that's the equivalent of $2.16 million of top-line gross revenue, right? You take $137,000 divided by 0.08, because that's the net margin ratio, that's the equivalent of selling $2.16 million worth of cars or services in the dealership. Top line. Hopefully you're following this math. And that is the equivalent of about one car a week. If you just thought of cars, you know, 40 grand, average sale, 45, whatever the number, it's roughly 50 some cars in a year by doing this one step of thinking differently about healthcare. And so that is the concept that I wanted to explain. And you may be like, you know, it's not that big a deal, John. It's 100 grand, you know, 137 grand. You're right. Some dealerships, this is not really a lot of money. You know, you could be making some serious profits. I don't know. Every dealership is different. I'll tell you, this one was like you're just going to take a $137,000 increase, like, because they had no other option, right? They were bidding it out. People were saying no. And so they were stuck, and they were given the options from their existing broker. And the whole time we were talking to them, they were talking to their broker, and I'm like, this is probably what's going to happen. And sure enough, it just like, yep, that's exactly what happened. You're waiting for that magical proposal that's still outstanding, right, from the health carrier that they're trying. And if it comes back flat or 5% above, there's something wrong, because they're not looking, there's something odd. They've shifted everything to your employees, or they've changed something, because that is not normal. They're not going to do that. They're not going to put that, leave that much money on the table. Insurance doesn't do that. They drop it a little bit to get the business the first year. They buy it, and then they whack you the second year. What strategy is that? You needed a new strategy long-term. And that was, of the six strategies we talked about, three of the six they had never heard of were more strategic moves, short-term and long-term changes to how their health plan operates. This was not a one-year magic silver bullet. This was a longer-term strategy to flatten. And in this case, this strategy can flatten out their increases so that 2 years in a row, they got a 30% increase. Last year, they got a 30, and then this year, they got a 30. What are the odds that they're going to continue to get 10, 20, 30, maybe 40% increases if they stay where they are with those strategies? Very high. What are the odds when they move to a new strategy we talked to them about? Very low, because the track record on these plans in the last 5 years has been average national increase of only like 6%, single digits. Some places it's flat, some places it goes down. So I hope this is helpful. This just puts things in perspective. If you'd like to chat more, certainly reach out to us. You can go to my website, millengroup.com, millengroup.com, and you can reach me there. And I would love to have a conversation. You know, it doesn't hurt to get a second opinion. It doesn't hurt to just find out what's out there. And now we're in the process of rolling out. I was out at the location. They're in a different state. I'm in Virginia. They're in New Mexico. I flew out there. And the other key part that was really important is that I flew in and presented this new option to their employees at their group meetings. They had four mandatory meetings on a Friday throughout the day. Everybody came in. We spent less than an hour, you know, just under an hour. And I explained how this new program works. And they were like, wow. They were like, this sounds like I would check during the meeting. I said, does everyone follow how this works? Yep. Okay. I'm going to tell you the good and the bad. I'm not going to stand up here and be like, everything is wonderful. There are some really good things about this. And there's some things that you may not like. Some of you may not like this at all, but that's the way it is now. Like, people love it or hate it. But this, I think overall, most of you will like this, because it's going to give you better coverage, which they didn't believe. They're like, oh, yeah, right. That's it. No, you're going to be able to get better coverage for yourself if you need it. You're going to be able to purchase what you want that makes sense for you. The cost is, we already know the cost is lower or equal to what you're paying now, if not lower. But it would have been, a different situation. And it gives you a lot more control based on the different dynamics. A dealership has three or four types of departments, right? You have service and tech, you have sales, you have upper management or leadership, and then you have administration, right? Finance and and payroll and all that stuff. So three or four different types of personas in a group. Bobby, the tech, that's amazing. He's 29 years old, has all the certifications for Honda, and has a baby now and recently married. His needs at 28, 29 as a young father are very different than someone that's 59, empty nester. So last story. So I'm in the bathroom after the first break. And if you've listened this long, I appreciate it. And hopefully this has been valuable. You can comment, I think, in the platform, but it doesn't matter. I'm in the bathroom after the first break. So people are coming in like at 15, 20 people at a time in the conference room. So between the first and second, I'm in the bathroom, wash my hands. And from behind me in the bathroom, I hear someone say, "I feel like I just got a raise." And I'm washing my hands and I'm like, I didn't know if he was talking to me. And I looked around, I said, "Oh," and I realized he was talking to me. And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again." He said, "I feel like I just got a raise, man. What did you just say in the meeting?" And then it started to click. I'm like, looked at it, and I turn around. I'm like, "Oh, okay. This guy, in his late 50s, maybe early 60s, was in the meeting. Looked like he had probably been there a while. Looked like a, I don't know what he did in the company." He said, "I feel like I just got a raise. I have been in so many of these meetings over the years," and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but his essence was, "I've been overpaying for insurance for so many years, and now I'm at a point where what you just showed me, if I'm hearing you, I get to pick what I want, what makes sense for me, because my kids are gone. I don't need a lot of extra bells and whistles on stuff, and I can get it for me and my wife, or just me. I can customize the plan for me and pay what I want to pay, and the employer is still contributing a massive amount of money to that." And I said, "That's right." He said, "I just feel like I just got a raise." And so when I went back to the second session, when I was talking to the controller and the general manager, I mentioned this. I said, "Yeah, he came up to us too." He said, I said, "What a great feeling. When's the last time that happened? When's the last time in an employee benefit presentation that anyone has said the words, 'I feel like I just got a raise'? Like, that's why I work so hard." Right there, that moment, that brief moment. I could have done a Zoom call for the meeting. They even said, "Hey, you don't have to fly out here." I'm like, no, I want to fly out there. I want to be there in person. I want to see your employees. I want to do the meetings. I want to have a printed color booklet with stuff in it of how this works. I want them to see me. I want to shake their hand. I want to shake your hand. I want you to know I'm here for the long term. It's no big deal, right? It's a $900 plane ticket. It's two stops each way. It's a two-hour time difference. It's a hotel, a rental car, some eating out, and time away from my one-year-old Maverick puppy that is crazy, so my family takes care of him. Just kidding. So I don't, I want to invest in that. I want to come out. And look what happened. I'm there in person. I'm in the bathroom. And an employee says to me, "I feel like I just got a raise." And he also told the two decision makers that made this possible for us to bring this new strategy number 6 of 6. And what I did in that first meeting, and there were four of them, and both of them were in all the meetings, which was amazing because it showed their support and they gave context before I started of, "Look, guys, last year we got a 30% increase and we had to adjust. This year we got another one. Like, we can't sustain this. We went looking. We talked to brokers locally and nationally. We talked to the Milling Group, blah, blah, blah." And they explained what the dynamic to educate employees about what's going on, which I think is so important. If you are a leader in a company, having you in those meetings, especially something like that, is crucial. I know it's hard. I don't see many general managers stand up every year means like, "Hey guys, hey, I'm real excited to share the rate increase we got and the coverage that we shrank for you guys and how we cost shifted to you and how your rates went up. But we've got some great wellness programs and the Anthem vendor is going to talk about the new dental plan that we saved 1% by bundling." Like, all that crap doesn't do shit to the efficiency of the plan. So you don't want to be there. This was like, I'm like, they didn't have to. I'm like, "Thank you for being there, because that's really important that you set the tone And what I said immediately after that was, I acknowledged the courage. I said, look, we've been in benefits for 22 years. I was joking. I said, hey, I'm excited to be here. This is kind of my first day on the job. And, you know, I'm the one that got the short straw. So they flew me out here. And you can see the look on their faces. They're like, oh, my God. And I, of course, said, I'm joking. I'm one of the founders. And I've done this for 20 years. So no big deal. And so it was a good icebreaker. They had a good sense of humor. It's always a test. Like, what's the culture like? If nobody laughs at that, I'm like, I'm in for some serious four rough meetings during this. But now my 5-hour energy is kicking in, so I'll maybe talk a little faster. So what I said, and this is really important, I think this will really help you if you are a leadership in a dealership, in really any company, but it doesn't matter, dealership, but they explained what happened, what was going on. And I told them, I shared that I would love for them to say something first. If they wouldn't have been eager, I would have brought them in automatically on every opening because they need to hear from the people they know. I'm a stranger. I'm a sales guy. I'm an insurance sales guy. Oh my God, we're in serious trouble. So right off the bat, and I know I've been in meetings. I'm like, oh God, here we go. Like, been lied to for the last 20 years. So I'm going to hear from this person who makes a lot of money, makes more money as our costs go up. So it was important for them to set the tone. And then I said immediately, I said, look, I've been doing this a long time. And I will tell you that, I'm not going to say their first names, but their first names, they had the reason that I'm here and the reason you're going to be presented with something that I think is you're really going to like. Some of you may not like it, right? But I think most of you will probably appreciate it once you see it. They had to have the courage to fight against a system that did not want change. $4 trillion does not want change. The broker they were working with didn't understand this new thing we were bringing, which even though it's been around for 4 years, and there's like 11 million enrolled members and 800,000 employers on it. So I said, you should feel grateful that you have these people in your life that work here, that care about you. If they didn't care about you, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, push the increase. I don't care about affordability. If we get caught, we pay the penalty. And they could have been on their way, saved a ton of time, right? The hours we spent leading up to that would have been just, I don't need this. Just pass it on. We'll deal with it. Oh, well. We'll give everyone a little bit of a 2% raise and it'll be fine. They had the courage to, number one, seek new information. Number two, have a conversation. Number three, they were very open-minded when they had questions, which was really impressive to me because sometimes we have to get into the weeds on some of these transition years, no matter what it is. If you're going fully insured to level funded or fully insured to self-funded or level funded to community funded or to cost plus, whatever the transition is, there's always some kinks and some learning that happen. And that was the case here, just like it is all the time. They're very patient, very open-minded, ask great questions. And the partners that I use, because it's not just me, like the vendors and partners and carriers and things I brought to the table, we were all very patient too, because we were like, okay, these are great questions and they're working through this. So I acknowledge that in the meeting that you should feel grateful you have people that care about you. Like, that's not the norm. I see this. And so I set that tone. And then it was real important that I was there and I explained the differences and how this health plan worked. And all along the way, I was very aware and I made comments that, look, we think this is going to be, as you heard already, we think this is going to be an improvement this year and then going forward. This is not a one-year, one-trick pony thing. This is hopefully going to be where we're going to stay for a long time. So kind of get used to it. And we know some of you aren't going to like it. We did our best to satisfy everyone, but we think once you learn that it's very flexible, so it'll give you some ability to make some decisions on your own instead of us standing here saying, this is what you get. And that helped. My honesty, I think, helped acknowledging that, like, hey, when you have questions about this or there's a situation, we're here to support, reach out to you, have book an appointment, get some support. We have all kinds of ways that we provide support after that group meeting, not just figure it out. That was important. We were honest with the employees and then to get feedback and see when they left the meeting, you could tell or they were talking or they'd say something like, this is really interesting. And now feedback. Almost one week after the group meeting, I'm checking in, like the response has been really favorable. People, as they learn more, as they talk to other people and they learn and it sinks in a little bit, they're very, they're excited about it, which, look, that's the whole point. That's the way it should be every year. Why should every year be a horrible thing? Like, you should look forward to your open enrollment benefits meetings. These are compensation packages being given to the employees in lieu of salary or cash, right? It's non-cash compensation benefits you're giving, you're investing in your best asset, your people. They're investing too, right? Maybe some companies pay 100% employee only. I did a meeting last night, 100% employee only. I'm like, this is, you know, that's amazing. So there's no cost to the employee for great healthcare. But you're investing in them, and this should be something that you get excited about, not something you dread. But unfortunately, and I've just seen the thousands of group meetings I've been in my 22-year career, that 98%, I don't know, I'm making that number up, 97%, almost every single one has been some kind of tap dance because things got worse. And you didn't tell them that that we got rid of specialty pharmacy drugs and you're on your own. They didn't tell them it was a move. They had a non-embedded deductible when they had an embedded deductible. They didn't tell them that tailored network is really a skinny network, which means you can only go to one hospital chain. Or they didn't tell them that we're going to a reference-based pricing plan where the hospitals in your area may not accept your insurance and then you're going to call in and we're going to have to fight for you. They didn't say any of that. So it was always a negative afterwards. And so you have this history of that. So I'm going to wrap this up. I hope this is beneficial, but I will say that if you're the kind of employer that this resonates with, let's talk. You know, you can do things right now, even if your health plan just renewed December 1, or let's say it's January, right? No matter when your health plan renews or is renewing, you should have a conversation with other people. You should ask them, tell me the different strategies you use to manage my healthcare budget. The line item in my company is 300 grand. It's projected to go to 400 grand and 500 and 800. What strategies are you going to bring to us? Generally, you don't have to get into all the trade secrets, but what are the strategies you're going to use to manage and help me finance this expense, this investment in my people? What are you going to bring? That is the key question. If you've listened 47 minutes, 18 seconds in, you're going to get the best part because this will empower you as a buyer to have a different conversation with vendors. The question isn't necessarily how long have you been in business, the company. It's important, but if they're like, hey, we just started a month ago, that's probably, you know, depends on where they came from. The question isn't, do you have an ERISA attorney on staff? The question isn't, do you do my 5500s? Who's going to answer all my emails when my employees have questions? Those are important, but that's nothing you need to worry about at first. What you need to ask is, what are the strategies you're going to bring, the buckets of solutions to help us manage our current and future healthcare costs and make sure we don't screw our employees over by just cost shifting? Because we have to attract and retain the best talent. We have to make sure mentally they're here, even if physically here and mentally here, that they're not checked out because, like, this is a shitty place to work and now my benefits just went up and I don't have good benefits. That's why I stayed. And so I'm just hanging on. That's what happens. And I know this because we talk to employees. We get the feedback. You may not get it. We get it. And so that's the value of opening your mind and saying, I want to have a different conversation. So if you get on with me in the future, the first thing you should say is, John, you know, tell me about these six strategies. Tell me where they're fit. Tell me how you think of them. Tell me which one we're using and which one would make sense. And I'll tell you within 5 minutes after doing this hundreds of times, I can tell someone very quickly of the six, these are the two I would look at, or this is the one you would look at. In this Honda dealer case, of the six, they had one. They were on. So I had five options to pick from, right? I said, there's one. I know exactly the strategy. I just need to do an analysis. Send me some data, and we're going to fact check and sure enough, it was it. Because I've done it so many times. I've had so many conversations. It was such an easy thing for me because that's what I'm a specialist in. It doesn't matter the carrier. Didn't matter my commission level. It didn't matter any of that stuff. What matters is what strategy we're going to use to manage this line item that's growing every year. So check us out, millengroup.com. Thanks for listening. This has been awfully long-winded. It might be the five-hour energy that kicked in. If we can ever help you. Also, keep this in mind. One last thing. You can make an advisor change. I call it a coaching change mid-year. You can change your broker, your advisor, in your benefits program anytime you want, at any part of the year. The only exception to that rule would be as if you've signed a contract, a separate contract with the brokerage firm that said, hey, you're going to be our broker, and it's a separate agreement that says for the next year or 2 years or something like that, or you have to give us 90 days notice if we change brokers. That is the rare exception. I rarely see that happen. It's usually, oh, no, I have to stay with them to the next open enrollment, to the next renewal cycle. And we just renewed in October, and it's now December, so call me next June. No, we're going to talk now, because you don't have to wait for the last 45 days to figure everything out. You can change your broker now. You just write a letter and we send it to the carriers and go, hey, starting today, John and his team are going to manage my plans. Most people don't know that. You can change your broker anytime you want, which means it gives you empowerment. Don't wait for the last moment when you get your renewal. Like, that doesn't matter. When you get your renewals and they start coming in, it's almost too late to react. Because if you get these massive renewals like this dealership did, then you're like, okay, well, we got the renewal, but the broker is going to bring us back some options. I'm like, yeah, they're going to come back with nothing because they're going to decline to quote. Like, that's the advice that you should have had the solutions ready, and you can get these proposals ready to go. So when you get the renewal 60 days out, 90 days out, you instantly know, boom, all right, we're moving. Done. So the strategies are ready to go, and you can do that. So just keep that in mind. The other thing is, if you have a fully insured plan, you can change your renewal date. And this is a pretty much unknown thing that no one talks about that is absolutely true in most cases. There may be some states that don't allow this, or some carriers that maybe don't. But if, let's say, you have a July 1 renewal date and you're on Blue Cross, I'm making something up. Actually, this is a client of ours. So they had a July 1 renewal, Blue Cross. We talked to them in like May or June of last year. It was too soon. They said, we've already already in open enrollment, the implementation. I'm like, no problem. Get through that. They liked what we had to say. They said, we're going to talk afterwards. And so they came on board with us mid-year back in November. They said, we want to switch over. So that was after the renewal date. So now we're working with them all the way until July 1. And the thing I told them is, you do not have to wait until July 1 if you want to implement these. You're fully insured. If you want to start enhancing your benefits January 1, you can. They're like, what? No one ever told us that. I'm like, yeah, they're not going to tell you that. Brokers are never going to tell you that. Why would they tell you that? They want to keep you for a year. They want you to think, you have to wait for my renewal. When you get your renewal, you know, then it's too late. Like, it's all a game. Like, no, I can change my renewal date anytime I want if I'm fully insured. Level funded, self-funded, custom plan, those are a little different. They're not impossible, but you can always change, in most cases, your advisor, which is the biggest part of the equation. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, and hopefully we will chat soon.